Hello and welcome to tonight's edition of Students for a Better Future Radio. I'm your host, Doreen LaGuardia with Cisco Acosta, and we are live.
Are you worried about Islamic terrorism? Well, you shouldn't be, because a new poll by Pew Research finds that only 20% of Muslims believe that targeting civilians can be acceptable as a tactic to further a religious cause. That means if you meet five Muslims, only one of them is likely to think it's okay to kill you. So that's good. Meanwhile, a California imam is apologizing after he referred to Jews as filth. Watch.
O Allah, liberate the Al-Aqsa Mosque from the filth of the Jews. O Allah, count them one by one and annihilate them down to the very last one. Do not spare any of them.
So do we have Islam all wrong? Is it actually a tolerant faith? Bob Morrow.
Hi, folks, and welcome to tonight's show. We're going to be talking about living in America with jihad. Cisco, can you hear me?
I'm here.
Before we actually get into tonight's topic, I just want to run through the elections. And in New Jersey, we are now reporting from the People's Republic of New Jersey right now, because Mayor Phil Murphy got in, and we have an all-Democratic legislator and now a Democratic governor, so pretty much anything that comes in is going to pass. And the reason why he got in is, well, for a couple reasons. Number one is a lot of the Republicans have moved out of New Jersey because of the high taxes.
Correct.
And two, yep, Kim Guadagno, She basically came out and said that she didn't support Trump. That's another reason. And so there's a whole host of reasons. So go ahead, Cisco.
Well, I think another factor, and then another reason why I left New Jersey, is that New Jersey has become a state that has tolerated, the people have tolerated high taxes and high crime and failed educational systems, and the people like my family, you know, and a lot of them left the state because they don't see a future for New Jersey. And now with the election of Phil Murphy, you know, New Jersey as a state will become, and I hope not, because I have our friends, so many friends and family, will become another failed state like California.
Yes, and Phil Murphy has come out and already stated that he's going to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. That's the first. Also said that he is also going to make the state a sanctuary state.
Yes, just like California. So, California just became a sanctuary state.
And we know that when it's a sanctuary state, it brings in crime.
Of course.
So we have to now deal with this. But anyhow, let's go on with our topic. We have a great guest coming up. Her name is Pam Geller. She's going to be joining us in just a minute. And I want to talk about the terror attack last week in New York.
Yes.
It was a man by the name of Saifulo Saipax.
I know if I'm saying his name right. You did a great job pronouncing his name.
He was age 29-year-old from Uzbekistan, but he was with the green card. He had a green card to stay in the United States. And what he did was he drove a rental truck from Home Depot, that's where he rented it from, and he drove it down a bike path near the World Trade Center. And this, by the way, this was on Halloween. And he shouted, "Ali Akbar." He killed 8 people and I believe injured 11. And when investigators went to take a look at his vehicle, he had handwritten notes on there. They were handwritten in Arabic, pledging loyalty to ISIS, along with the flag symbol of ISIS. And so this was under the administration of de Blasio, and I'm going to mention Chucky, too, in just a second. But the suspect had entered the USA under a particular visa. What is it, the diversity immigrant visa in 2010, and was a permanent green card resident. He resided in Ohio, Tampa, Florida, and Paterson, New Jersey, and he had worked for Uber, and he had a CDL. Sisto, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Well, I don't know. I don't know about the green card. I don't know about the green card. I thought he was here. He came on a diversity visa, but I was not aware. I was not aware of the green card.
Yeah. And so now with this diversity program, the immigrant visa program is actually proposed by Chuck Schumer, and it was signed into law by George H. Bush. So that's how he got in, and he had actually told the FBI agents when he was in the hospital that he had no problem killing these people. And that's a statement that I got. I actually got it out of the New York Times.
Well,
we're going to bring on Pam.
That just shows you that there's no way you're going to be able to vet some of these individuals from Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan and some of these unknown places in this world. How are you going to possibly vet them? You know, it's just the idiotic form of processing and of the Democrats that really, really makes me wonder. Do they really, really care about the country, or do they just are totally bent on destroying the country?
Right. Well, that means votes for them when they let everybody in the country.
At this point, I want to bring on Pam Geller, our guest for this evening.
She is the co-founder of Stop Islamized of Nations, that's an umbrella group. That also includes the Stop Islamization of America and the Stop Islamization of Europe. And she is also the leader in the counter-jihadi movement in the American, and same thing, plays a role in the European movement as well. And she's also author of a book called The Post-American Presidency, The Obama Administration, and War in America, with Robert Spencer and former Ambassador John Bolton, and another book called The Stop Islamization of America. We're going to bring her online on the show, and this is really her expertise. So hold on a minute.
Hello? Hello?
Yes. Good evening. I'm Pam Geller.
Hi, Pam.
This is Storin. Doreen LaGuardia from the radio station. You're live on the air.
Hello.
We're talking about the recent New York City case, and we basically discussed some policy of the administration and about the visa program that had allowed these type of character to come into the country. And so why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, my name is Pamela Geller. I'm the editor and publisher of The Geller Report and author of Fatwa, Hunted in America, my new book that just came out this week. It's a story, it's actually my story, of living under a fatwa, which under Islam is a legal ruling by a recognized authority. It's a death sentence. And it's interesting that you're talking about the Halloween jihad and the policies that led to it. Because, you know, just yesterday we saw Mayor de Blasio reelected, barely, I would say, because he may have won in a landslide. I don't know what the final numbers were, but I can tell you, being a New Yorker, no one was at the polls. I mean, it was a ghost town. And to me, that was shocking because it was Mayor de Blasio who, in the last election, campaigned on dismantling counterterrorism policies and did just that. The mosque of Saifula Saipov, and his first name, Saipula, means sword of Allah. You know, his mosque, the Omar Mosque, was under investigation in one of those counterterrorism policies. There were over 20, dangerous jihadis being monitored there. He dismantled that program. And so who's to say what would have happened if that program remained in place? Perhaps that plot would have been thwarted. And the fact that this was not only not news, because we know the media is very much aligned with the jihad force, but that New Yorkers were not even curious in so much as what mosque he went to, and why didn't they know that the mosque was under investigation and that Mayor de Blasio, you know, stopped that investigation? And if they did know, why didn't they care? You know, so whatever's coming, and there's plenty coming, I can tell you that. New York has no one to blame but themselves. They had a very good candidate with Nicole. I'm not gonna butcher her last name. I'm not gonna do it. From Staten Island, and they completely dropped the ball. It wasn't even close.
Well, Pam, hi. Welcome to the show. This is Cisco. And I have to tell you, as a New Yorker, living all my life in New York, I've gone through quite a few great mayors and horrible mayors like David Dinkins and then a great mayor like Rudy Giuliani. De Blasio has to rank as the worst of all of them.
Well, and, to your point, if it wasn't for the horror of the Dinkins administration, Giuliani would never have been elected.
Correct. That's
remember,
true.
You remember the riots in Brooklyn in Crown Heights, where they were attacking Jews, massive crowds of African Americans slaughtered in cold blood, a Jewish student in the street, and he did nothing during the riots. I mean, that's what it took. That's the level of depravity that New Yorkers need to get to elect a responsible mayor. Well, I think that's a stunning indictment of New Yorkers.
Well, I'm very disappointed with the people of New York and also the people of New Jersey for electing two individuals that are really going to destroy and ruin the future of New York and New Jersey, New York City. And I'm very sad because that is why so many people are just moving out of those two, cities and states.
Yeah, of course, they're voting with their feet. Look, these are notoriously blue states, and New York may have had moments of lucidity, but overall, New York, yes, is the greatest city in the world. It's the capital of the free world, but in everything except politics. In politics, it's a sick city. It has always been a sick city. This is not new. It's under the boot of the Democrats, back to Boss Tweed, Tammany Hall. I mean, we have suffered as a city. Even if you remember, you might not recall this, but New York has always been on the wrong side of history. Even during the Civil War, there was a vote for New York to secede from the Union. always on the wrong side of history. So this is consistent, but it's a pity that we have learned nothing, especially a city that is so much a target of the global jihad. And I have crossed swords with the city government a number of times. This is all outlined in my book. I mean, it's not just my story about living under fatwa and being the target of multiple assassination plots, like in Garland, Texas, or last week in Boston, the ringleader of a Muslim plot to behead me was convicted in that plot and on all charges, and he faces a life sentence now. But, you know, it's the other fights. It's the fights in the information battle space where I had to sue the city of New York when I wanted to run ads to counter vicious ads, pro-Sharia, pro-jihad, anti-Jewish, anti-Israel ads. I had to sue to get them up, and I sued, and I won. And then the city, for the first time in its history, banned all political ads from the transit system, from buses, subways, billboards. I mean, this is supposed to be the capital of the free world. They banned all political ads, and they banned all cause-related and religious ads. And then, of course, after New York did it, because New York really is, you know, a template, Washington did it, Boston did it, Chicago, Miami, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Denver. This is what's going on across this country, and people are not even aware of it. I mean, this is the country of the First Amendment, not the Fifth, not the Eighth, but the First Amendment. And this is the kind of suppression of free speech that we're getting. It's incredible to me, because freedom of speech is the foundation of a free society. And without it, a tyrant can wreak havoc unopposed. The bottom line is, you know, it's offensive. Listen, everything that the media says about me is offensive. Am I going to criminalize their speech? Of course not. I will debate them, but they won't debate me, because my ideas are better. My ideas are based on individual rights and equality for all before the law. They won't debate me. They have to use ad hominem attacks. They have to smear me, demonize me, defame me, monsterize me, make me into a monster, so that no one will listen to the message of a monster. But putting up with being offended is essential in a pluralistic society, in which people differ on basic truths. If a group will not bear being offended without resorting to violence, that group will rule unopposed while everyone else lives in fear, while other groups curtail their activities to appease the violent group. And then this results in the violent group being able to tyrannize the others. And this is what you are seeing. Because if speech that offends a group is outlawed or rendered verboten, that group has absolute power. And a free society is destroyed. A group that cannot be criticized cannot be opposed, and it will work its will no matter what it is. And you know what? No one will be able to say anything.
Well, it's just like what's happening in Europe. In Europe, you know, there's no First Amendment, no freedom of expression, and you know, they have the hate speech. I mean, as I recall, you're banned from entering the UK, correct?
Yes, I am. But they allow hate preachers in. You know, they allow the most vicious, jihad-spewing imams in. But I was banned. I was supposed to appear at a ceremony in memory. I was supposed to lay a wreath on Armistice Day, Armed Forces Day, lay a wreath at the site of where a young British father, a young British soldier, was beheaded in broad daylight on a street outside of London. Denied me entry, and they banned me from the country, saying that my presence was not conducive to the public good, that Muslims might get violent. So you see, you're rewarding violent behavior. You are saying, oh, if you're violent, we will do as you command that we do. And, you know, we sued my law firm, American Freedom Law Center, David Yerushalmi and Robert Muse, the leading First Amendment law team in the country. They didn't sue on this one. I had to use, of course, a British firm, but we sued the Crown. And what was most interesting was some of the documents we got out of that lawsuit under the duty of candor. We didn't win because every time we went into a courtroom there, it was all about, well, we can't discuss it. It's national security. Excuse me? First of all, everything I've ever said and ever written is online. I've never, ever incited or exhorted to violence. I believe in freedom of speech. I believe the war should be in the battle of words, that we should battle ideas, because really this is where the action is in the information battle space. All the bullets and bombs and bloodshed comes as a result of what happens in this war. But they would not allow me in. And in these papers that I received, a good part of the reason was my support of Israel. And they actually said in the emails to each other that was released under the duty of candor that they shouldn't mention that when going public with the ban, because a number of American presidents feel that way too, which I thought was funny but also reflective of their anti-Semitism. But, yeah, I'm still banned, actually. It's now, I think, going on 5 years.
Well,
Hold on, Cisco. Do you, Pam? Do you think that that governments around the world actually go out of their way to appease the Muslims?
They are. I mean, it's policy. When you see Geert Wilders, or as they pronounce it in America wrongly, Geert Wilders, Geert Wilders is second in, you know, the most powerful political party in Holland. He has been prosecuted for hate speech, merely for, you know, reciting Quranic verses. So when imams recite Quranic verses, you know, Muhammad saying, "I have been made victorious through terror," or "smite them at their neck," or, you know, "slay the unbelievers wherever you find them," he's put on trial. Brigitte Bardot has been indicted 5 separate times on these hate speech charges. They call it racism. First of all, Islam is not a race. It's not a skin color. It's not a gender. It's not a nationality. It's not the color of your socks. Okay? It's an ideology. So that's the first thing that they have the West bowled over. But we do see the EU. We do see these countries adhering to the Sharia. We see the American press adhering to the Sharia. In the wake of the Halloween jihad, not 4 hours, the blood is still warm and the bodies strewn all over Tribeca. NBC's headline is, "American Muslims Brace for Backlash." Now, this is what we get after every jihad attack. We get Sharia and we get Dawah. Sharia is Islamic law. You cannot criticize Islam or offend Islam. And you get Dawah, which is an imperative under Islam. If you're speaking of Islam, you are proselytizing for Islam. So there's never any backlash. We get this after every jihad attack. Going back to 9/11, they said the same thing. There's never any backlash. What we come away with after a jihad attack is that the real victims are Muslims. And then this latest twist, this obscene, perverted twist, where you have the media rebranding Allahu Akbar. You have Jake Tapper saying that it's a beautiful phrase. You have the New York Times 2 days in a row doing 2 separate glowing pieces on Allahu Akbar. The Huffington Post, New York Daily News. I mean, this is just obscene. Allahu Akbar is the jihadi war cry. Allahu Akbar is what Muhammad would screech as he went into battle. As a matter of fact, Muhammad, and I'm talking about the prophet of Islam, would wait until daybreak before he would attack a village. He would wait until daybreak to hear if there was a Muslim call to prayer coming from the village. If there was, that sound, Allahu Akbar, the morning call to prayer. If there was a morning call to prayer, Muhammad would not strike that village. If there wasn't, he would slaughter, rape, behead, pillage that town. So it's really not just a supremacist declaration, because Allahu Akbar means Allah is greatest. Allah is greater. Greater than what? Greater than your God. But it's also a declaration of, I am a Muslim, so don't kill me. or as the Quran says, I am the best of people. Do not kill me. And as you see, with whether it's the Islamic State or it's Boko Haram or it's Al-Shabaab, when they're conducting a mass jihad attack, whether it's in Mumbai, whether it was in Kenya, Nairobi, at the Westgate Mall, we see that they will test their victims and ask them questions to see if they're Muslims. In Mumbai, they let all Muslims go. In Westgate, at the mall, they grilled them. They asked them questions, and if they didn't know the answers, they gouged their eyes out and they killed them. And what bothered me most about that story, I mean, it's disgusting and vile and barbaric, but even more, I thought, savage, was why didn't any of the Muslims yell out the answers? Like when they said, what was Muhammad's mother's name? Why didn't somebody just say, Amina? Like, why wasn't that human impulse there? Nobody did. No Muslims did that. And they were slaughtered. And so, again, this campaign of disinformation is so dangerous. Listen, it's why I wrote the book. Anyone that follows my work, and I've been doing this since 9/11, knows I've never discussed the personal side. I've never discussed my private life at all. But I felt we were reaching a tipping point, and the American people needed to know that there are Americans that are living under 24-hour death threat, requiring 24-hour security, that you cannot trust law enforcement. Law enforcement was in on the planning of the Garland, Texas jihad. And if you'd like, I could explain a little bit about what that event was. There was a French Paris weekly called Charlie Hebdo. It was a French magazine. And it's an offensive magazine, sort of like Mad Magazine for adults. They insult everybody. Christianity, Judaism. They're just obnoxious. So what? Anyway, they ran a cartoon of Muhammad, and there was a fatwa issued against them. Now, these fatwas have no expiration date. I will have a fatwa on my head for the rest of my life, just like Salman Rushdie. His fatwa is just alive as it is, just as alive and potent as it was in 1989 when it was first issued. And Charlie Hebdo's fatwa was issued 2 years before they were all slaughtered in the office. In their magazine offices, devout Muslims opened fire and killed cartoonists, editors, and writers. And so 3 days after that slaughter of the magazine staff in Paris, Muslim leaders in this country assembled in Garland, Texas, and they did not stand for the freedom of speech. And wouldn't that have been a golden moment for American Muslims? Wouldn't that have showed the world about, you know, American Muslims, you know, enlightenment? No. They held a conference in support of Muhammad, in support of the Sharia, in support of Islamic law, the blasphemy laws. They held a Stand with the Prophet conference in support of the Sharia against, quote, Islamophobia. And again, here we go with that term. And it's important to explain that term amounts to little more than the enforcement of Sharia in the marketplace of ideas. The concept of Islamophobia. Any criticism of jihad terror that examines its ideological roots in Islam is called Islamophobia, and the word is used to intimidate people into thinking there's something wrong with opposing jihad. So I held a conference in that same room, in that same venue, in that same city, Garland, Texas, in support of the freedom of speech. I held a conference. It was an art exhibit showing depictions of Muhammad over the past 1,400 years in art and literature. Dante's Inferno. I was trying to show that Muhammad had been depicted and people were not always being beheaded and slaughtered in cold blood, and that was happening today in order to impose the Sharia, the blasphemy laws, on the West. That's why I did it.
Part two of the interview with Pam Geller.
I had this competition, and two jihadists opened fire. And if it wasn't for my security team, my SWAT team, I don't know how many Americans would have been killed. But what came out of that event, apart from the fact that we smoked out a jihad cell, there were numerous plots that they had subsequently found out about because of those jihadists. But we found out a year later in an indictment in North Carolina of an ISIS recruiter, Eric Jamal Hendricks, that he had been communicating with the FBI in the plot against the jihad attack on Garland, that there was an FBI undercover agent in on the plot. Now, the left went nuts with this. The Daily Beast said, oh, look, he said tear up Texas. as if that would be some form of entrapment, which I think is absurd. Like if someone said to me, tear up New York, I would get in a machine gun and start mowing down people. It's just absurdly stupid. No, that didn't bother me. They were at our event. The FBI was texting the jihadists, Ibrahim Simpson and Nadia Soufi, at our event. They were asking how many people are there, how many police are there, is the FBI there? And then 60 Minutes did a piece on the fact that the FBI was in the car behind the jihadists. When the jihadists got out of the car, the FBI stopped the car and started taking cell phone footage of them. And when the jihadists began firing on us, they got in the car and drove away. They were actually pulled over by Garland police because the police thought they were part of the plot. So what's wrong with this story? They never warned us. They didn't alert us, and they didn't have anyone there. They had no one there to protect us. So what did they think was going to happen when they began firing? What did they think was going to happen? As a matter of fact, the guard, one of the guards who was shot by the jihadists in the leg, is suing the FBI for aiding and abetting ISIS because that was the first ISIS attack in the United States. That's what I mean when I say you can't trust law enforcement, because they have been infiltrated at the senior level. Came out yesterday, Thomas Fitton over at Jihad Watch, under his Freedom of Information Act. He's just so marvelous with the work he's doing. Exposed that former FBI director and now Russian investigator, which should give everybody pause, former FBI director Mueller had partnered with terrorist groups, terror-tied groups in this country. I'm talking about CARE, Council of American Islamic Relations, unindicted co-conspirator in the largest terrorist funding trial in our nation's history, had partnered with CARE and ISNA, also named in the Holy Land trial as an unindicted co-conspirator and Muslim Brotherhood proxy. He partnered with them to purge all counterterrorism materials of jihad, Islam, and Sharia. So, yeah, this goes to the senior level. And that's why I wrote this book, because the American people have no clue what's going on right under their noses. It's as if they're Helen Keller and someone moved the furniture. They're really blind. This is not static. This is fluid. This is going to get much worse.
Hold on, Cisco. Pam, you hold on. Have you heard of the Brendan Tevlin case of that happened in West Orange, New Jersey? He was 18 years old, okay, and he came back from college for the summer. He went to the University of Richmond. It must have been about 12 o'clock in the night, and you know how boys are. They came home from – he was coming home from his friend's house. The mom said to us that he was playing video games there, and he had actually texted her. Well, he stopped at a stoplight in West Orange, New Jersey.
And he was shot to death by Ali Muhammad Brown.
Yes.
Was shot to death. Again, this is not a story that nobody knows. And you know what? Thank you for bringing it up. Because no one knows that story about Ali Muhammad Brown. And he had come from killings of gays in Seattle, if I'm not mistaken. It was definitely Washington State.
Yes.
Yeah, he had murdered, somehow, I don't know if it was a dating app, I don't know how he met these gays, but he shot and killed them in cold blood in Washington, yeah. Two men, he shot outside a gay nightclub in Seattle, and then he crossed the country and went in New Jersey killed that young boy. And you know how he described himself to detectives? He described himself to detectives as a strict Muslim. That's how he described himself to detectives. And you know what? And I'm the problem. You see? I'm the problem because I oppose jihad terror. I am a racist, Islamophobic, anti-Muslim bigot. You get it?
Yeah.
And this guy will go to jail.
Yeah.
This guy will go to jail, and he will get 3 halal meals, and he will get his prayer mat, and he will get his, because you got to respect his religion. He will get his prayer mat,
right.
And he will get his Quran, and he will, I assure you, convert and radicalize others. Do you know that the jihadis who beheaded Lee Rigby, the soldier I was telling you about in the UK who was beheaded in the street. I was supposed to lay a wreath at. His beheader, his murderer, is a hero in the prison. He is looked at as a superstar, and he's converting and radicalizing other prison inmates. And prisons have become a hotbed of jihadism. You're never going to hear Diane Sawyer when she did her special on ISIS last Friday night. And she did a special on how ISIS recruited in America. And let me tell you something. It was everything but Islam. It was because this guy was lazy. That guy was fat. This kid was popular, but bored. This kid was unpopular. You could not believe the garbage that this woman, who, by the way, I'm sorry, you can say anything you want to me, okay? She's just too old. Enough, Diane. Put down the mic, okay? You can barely talk, okay? You're a million years old. It's like my grandmother used to say, kumza fresha. It's time for the fresh crop. Like, you got to give it up. Plus, you stink. Plus, you stink, okay? Plus, at such a critical time, you're dishing out, you're shoveling this garbage when it's such a critical issue, it's the gravest threat our nation faces, and you're coming up with crap like that and proselytizing for Islam and showing, you know, little Muslim children in schools and how we can't bully them. And, you know, nobody talks about it. And I have parents writing me all the time about Muslim children in public schools here that bully particularly Jewish kids. Nobody talks about that. Or the fact that if you look at the FBI statistics, the highest hate crime is against the Jews. It's like fourfold, okay? And a Muslim is way down there. And they don't even separate how much of that Muslim hate crime is committed by Muslims. Like that Yasmin Saweed, the girl that said that she was attacked on the train by three drunken white guys yelling Trump and trying to pull her hijab. She was on the cover of every single newspaper, not just here in America, but in Europe. It was world news. And then it came out that she lied about it. And why did she lie? Because she had a non-Muslim boyfriend, and she was afraid of her father. And then, I mean, the story just gets weirder and weirder. When she appears in court, her head is shaved. Her father shaved her head. And the newspaper's reporting it like this is normal. And Yasmin Saweed appeared in court, her head shaved, as if this is a normal thing. And I guarantee you her father didn't shave her head because she lied and said it was Islamophobia. He shaved her head because she was dating a non-Muslim boy. That's why he shaved her head. The media is the most powerful and dangerous weapon that our enemies have in their arsenal.
Pam, I want to touch on a couple of things. I want to touch on a couple of things because I'm one of those very few Americans that actually is very informed about Islam and Muslims all over the world and what's happening in Europe, especially like in the UK with Tommy Robinson, who's a great hero. I mean, he's fighting a battle by himself over there against the Muslims. I don't know if you're familiar with Tommy Robinson. In the UK.
I am familiar with Tommy Robinson. I worked with Tommy Robinson for a number of years. And then when he got into trouble with some mortgages, with some bank fraud, you know, he threw me under the bus. You know, it was not a cool thing to do. I guess he wanted less jail time. So he had to publicly rebuke me. So I'm not a giant fan, but you could understand that. You know what I mean? I don't want to say anything bad about him, but that was just...
Oh, no. I know he's definitely one of the individuals that in the UK that is going really.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. I completely agree.
But the other thing, I think a lot of, and I want to get your opinion on it. I think a lot of the reason that a lot of the politicians and a lot of the laws and the media is being compromised in regards to Muslim is because of the Muslim effect regarding petrodollars, the money that is coming in, especially from Saudi Arabia. You know,
of course.
We just had a purge. We had a purge of all these prime ministers and who were basically influenced throughout and pouring money all over the world to build mosques and build schools. And that was really, really one of the biggest influence. Saudi Arabia is one of the biggest influences when it comes to Wahhabi.
That's not, well, yeah, okay, I just want to, I think we're conflating two issues. I don't think that's going to stop, and you're right, 80% of the mosques in this country are built with Saudi money through the Islamic Circle of North America, that organization, 80% of the mosques. What we see going on in Saudi Arabia right now with all these arrests, even Prince Talal, is the new sheriff is in town, and he is going to quash and suppress and arrest any perceived threats to his reign, any perceived threats to his throne. And I will tell you that no one's really paying attention to what's happening in Saudi Arabia, but that could go very badly. I mean, as bad as Saudi Arabia is, and I think they're horrible, it could fall to a, imagine a Khomeini, okay, Khomeini is Shia, in Iran, but imagine that. Imagine that kind of a rule, an Islamic State kind of seizing control of Saudi Arabia. That could become a very, very dangerous situation. That's a scary situation there. But I agree. If not for the listen, you know, there's 1,400 years of jihadi wars, land appropriations, cultural annihilations, and enslavements. The fact is, the Ottomans, the caliphate, was vanquished by the British Empire. That's why there's so little. When we grew up, we didn't know anything about from Islam. We weren't taught about the caliph and how they slaughtered millions and millions of people in our school because it was history that it was like any other group that was extinct. You know, you didn't even think about it. I shouldn't say group, I should say ideology that was extinct. They were vanquished. But yes, it was the West, vis-a-vis the petrodollars that resurrected the Islamic world. But more so, it was Jimmy Carter who threw out our great ally, our great friend from the power in the region, Iran, the Shah of Iran. He was a great friend of this country. He was a great ally in the region, as good as Israel. And he really helped oust him and install the most vicious, brutal mullocracy in modern history. He resurrected the Islamic supremacist global movement. That, and of course, America aiding Afghanistan against the Soviets. Nobody saw that coming. You know, we aided the Mujahideen, and that's where that was where Osama bin Laden rose from. And Osama bin Laden felt that once he defeated, in his mind, he felt that he defeated the Soviets. He thought, well, I can take down one superpower. Why can't I? I could certainly take down another.
Right, but I think what you meant when you mentioned the thing about the FBI and not trusting law enforcement, they're all, in my opinion, they're getting money, they've been bribed, they've been compromised by Saudi money, Middle Eastern money, which has been influencing, and now you're seeing about the Huffington Post and the media, they're getting a payoff from that.
Yep, I believe that
They're swinging and leaning and basically criticizing individuals like yourself that are out there really getting out the message. They want to basically – they don't want that to happen because, hey, you know, they're working for their masters in the Saudi Peninsula.
Well, listen, this came out – this is the latest revelation in the Russia dossier – uranium deal that, of course, the media just doesn't want to talk about. I mean, it's just, as a matter of fact, it was brought up before Congress, the fact that the media is just not, they're doing the American people a great harm by not discussing these key issues because the American people are not being informed. It just came up, some caucus brought up the fact that the Uranium One deal is not being discussed. But what the latest revelation is that reporters were paid to spread collusion claims. And so now they're trying to get these names out of Fusion which was the group that Hillary paid for the dirty dossier. And they're not denying that journalists were paid, but they're saying that under the First Amendment, they shouldn't have to release the names. Well, let me tell you, if you're paying press, that's not First Amendment anymore. You know, that's really dangerous when you're misinforming and feeding poison to the press because you're getting paid for it. So, I mean, to your point, absolutely. And I don't think, and because they really make so little money, I don't even think they have to do much. What I mean by that is a couple theater tickets. I think our people come very cheap. A dinner.
Right.
Yeah, a dinner at a nice restaurant. You know, they're very, the left is very, you know, they're very, like, thirsty and immoral. So you can have them. They're like cheap prostitutes. You can have them for a couple bucks.
Yeah. But Pam.
Yeah.
I want to make another point. Getting back to Europe, you see how the media, you see how the EU attacks countries like Poland, countries like Slovakia, like Hungary, and now even Austria, that they just basically have a new prime minister that's opposed to the migration that has been compromised also and influenced by the NGO organizations and non-governmental that are getting paid by the EU and by Middle Eastern countries to basically transport all these supposed migrants that are basically individuals that are all practically all males. No females. I haven't seen any females.
Well, right. No. There were some females, but you absolutely, the majority were male, military age, and fit. It is an invading army. It's the Hijra. You know, Islam doesn't start. The religion of Islam doesn't start until Muhammad migrates, until Muhammad leaves Mecca as an immigrant, as it were, from Medina. That's when Islam starts, because that's when he begins to spread Islam by the sword. And so the Hijra, al-Hijra, the immigration jihad, is a religious imperative. It is an imperative that you migrate and you spread Islam. And what most people don't understand is that Muslims are the only immigrant group that come to the West with a ready-made model of society that they believe to be superior, and they seek to impose it. And under Islam, Sharia law supersedes man-made law. No man-made law is over the law of Allah. None. That's an absolute.
So there's actually direct conflict with Sharia law coming into the United States here.
Well, you know, the thing is, there, you know, the elites are adhering to it. I mean, you see the media is self-enforcing the Sharia. You see after Muslims open fire on a free speech event on home soil in our country, I was blamed, like one would blame the rape victim for wearing a skirt. I was blamed by the media. They were not sympathetic, not at all. I shouldn't have done it. That's what I was told. I shouldn't have done it. And this is the Sharia, you know. Islamic law forbids any criticism of Islam, Quran, Muhammad. And if they cannot be criticized in the U.S., we are, in effect, accepting Islamic law as overriding the freedom of speech. And what this does is this basically establishes Muslims as a superior class. I mean, it's really happening. I'm living it. You know, you talk about it with people who are unaffected by it, and they think that you're making this stuff up. But in fact, I am living under it. And what happens is, I got two letters today, two different parents in schools, and they're like, "Listen, I just sort of found out about you, and this, I apologize, but I really need help, but I don't know where to turn." My seventh grader is learning the Shahada and coming home with the five pillars of Islam, and I don't know what to do. And, you know, I said to the parent, I said, "Do not go in and say that Islam is X, Y, and Z. do not go in with a Quran and don't point to, you know, slay them wherever you find them, kill the Jews if they, wherever they hide, behind a tree. No. Say that if you're going to teach the Shahada, you are to teach the Lord's Prayer, and you're to teach the Shema. And if you're going to have a chapter on Muhammad, you have a chapter on Jesus, and you have a chapter on Moses. And if you're going to teach the five pillars, of, you're going to teach Judeo-Christian. I mean, because it is a, say that it is a violation of the Establishment Clause, that you cannot favor one religion over another. And if it's under the guise of world history, that's why they're teaching Islam, then why aren't they teaching of the of 1,400 years of jihadi wars and enslavements and cultural annihilations and the hundreds of millions of victims? Go in there, devoid of Islam if you can, because what you want to try and do is effect some change, not be called a racist, Islamophobic, anti-Muslim bigot, which is what happens to these parents, and they recoil at being called a racist. They don't even know that Islam is not a race. This is establishing Muslims as a protected class, you see? And so this is what we have to push back against. But it's in everything. They banned the Gela ban. They banned all these ads from cities. It's Sharia. They're teaching our children in the public schools about Islam. That's Sharia. The workers are suing in the workplace, Heinz, Hertz, Walmart, Target, Disney, to impose Muslim prayer times and religious garb, and they're winning. They're winning massive lawsuits. That's Sharia. I mean, Target and Walmart, they didn't want to handle meat that's not halal, Muslim cashiers. Then don't get a job where you have to handle meat that's not halal. I mean, that's really pretty elemental. But no, they sued and they won.
Pam, one of my major concerns, and I know for a fact that you know about this, but the majority of Americans are totally clueless to this, that there is a potential for the first Muslim governor in the U.S., Dr. Abdul El-Sayed, a liberal Democrat, running in the state of Michigan. The Democrats are going to pour money. They want to make him the second Obama. What's your take on that?
I don't know his background. So, I mean, I don't know. There are many secular Muslims. There are Muslims that have run from jihad. I don't know. I don't care about individuals. I care about the ideology. I don't know enough about him. But if he's a liberal Democrat, it's not a good sign. And that party is really now being run. I mean, Tom Lopez may have won, but Keith Ellison is his partner. Keith Ellison is Muslim Brotherhood. Keith Ellison, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood paid for his Hajj. You know, when he went on Hajj to the pilgrimage, I mean, he's really an operative, hardcore. He's, you know, running the DNC. It can't be good, but I don't know the man. I don't know his background. But look, that state has deep problems. It really does. That's Hamtramck, right, is in that state, first Muslim city council. And all kinds of things are happening there. I mean, you know, people will wake up one day in a gulag and they're like, how did I get here? Well, nothing happens for decades, and decades happen in a day. It doesn't nothing. Things don't just happen. Things are made to happen, and things are happening. And just because, you know, you can avoid reality, but you can't avoid the consequences of avoiding reality.
I just want to say we do have callers on the line. Hold on, Cisco. One sec. We do have callers on the line. If you can, press 1 if you want to ask a question. And don't be shy. Go ahead, Cisco.
Well, I know a little about him. I've been reading up on him. He does believe in Sharia law. He's a firm believer in Sharia law, and that's something that, you know, Dearborn, Michigan, is basically 99% controlled by the Muslims.
Yeah. Well, you know, people should go. People should go to these events, although, of course, you know, there is that imperative under Islam, taqiyya, to lie to advance Islam. So you ask and say, do you think Hamas is a terrorist group? Now, if he turns around and he says, well, I oppose any terrorism against innocent civilians. There's a problem with that, because under Islam, the kuffar, the infidel, the non-Muslim, is never innocent and not considered an innocent Muslim. So he's still being true to Islam if he says that, and still he's fooling the kuffar, that's us, the filthy non-Muslim. So, I mean, it is a good question to ask anyway. And I would also ask about, you know, what do you think of drawing a cartoon? Do you have a problem with that? Again, of course, he may very well lie, but it pays to ask these questions. No one ever does. And, mm-hmm. you know, it does catch them off guard, and you might be able to get a window into his soul.
Definitely.
Okay, Pam, we're running out of time. Cisco, running out of time.
The book
is Fatwa Hunted in America, and it's my story, but honestly, what happened to me is what happens to every American who stands, in small and large ways, it happens to every American who stands in defense of freedom. It should be required reading. Because I was apolitical before 9/11. I was the quintessential New York City career girl. I love my art, my fashion, my life, my books, my music, the theater, and I assumed my freedom. I thought the good cop was on the world beat and evil had been defeated in World War II, and I never thought my freedom could ever be in jeopardy or could, you know, was even a question. It was like the air that I breathed. And then, you know, 9/11 was a political awakening for me, and I felt guilty. I didn't know who had attacked the country. And when I found out, I felt guilty that I didn't understand the ideology. And so I read the Quran, and then I read the great scholars, the honest scholars of Islam, Ibn Warraq and Bacheyor. And this is how I came to the fight, purely organically. And so my story is the story of every American. It will shock people. It will shock people because it's not just living under 24-hour death threat. It's the fights. It's the battles. Mm-hmm. It's leading the opposition to the Ground Zero mosque when the president wanted it and the mayor wanted it and the media was dying for it. And yet we defeated that mosque. So these things are possible because that 16-story mosquestrosity in a building that was destroyed in the 9/11 attacks would have been Mecca on the Hudson. It would have been Mecca on the Hudson. So these are the fights, and there are too numerous to go into here, but it is riveting. You will be on the edge of your seat, and you will want to get fatwa for Hanukkah for your family, and you will want to get fatwa for Christmas for your friends, because we need an army of Davids to defeat this enormous, unbelievably funded Goliath of a leftist Islamic axis.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
And Pam... Yeah, I wanted to thank you for coming on the show, and you can come back anytime,
definitely.
Of course. This is a very pressing issue. And Cisco, the closer?
Definitely, definitely. Well, we just had a great guest who is a true warrior when it comes to defending freedom, and we must believe and help her in joining together to battle the evil that we have, that we're confronting now. God bless America.
God bless you.
Amen. And folks, we are out until next week. Have a good night.